Good afternoon. My name is Karen, and I'm an alcoholic. And I'm sober today by the grace of God and the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. And because of you and a lot of people like you, I haven't found it necessary to take a drink today. And for someone like me, that's really a miracle. I want to thank the powers to be that I'm here, but basically I think that God has got me here. And so I thank God that I'm here today with you to share. I live in Mission, Texas, which is right on the Rio Grande, 6 months out of the year. My home group there is the Monday Night Share group. And the other half of the year, I live in Upper Michigan in Iron Mountain. And my meeting there is the woman's 5:30 meeting. And so I'm very fortunate that I have two groups, both places. I have a sponsor, and she has a sponsor, and I sponsor people. So I'm very blessed in the fellowship. When we look at the 10th step, the first word is continue. And so that definitely means we must have been doing something before we got there. When you say the prayer for the still suffering alcoholic, when you start your meetings, I want to thank you because that's how I got sober from your prayer. Because on February 14th in 1977, I woke up and I could not take another drink. It wasn't any different than any other day of my life, but I got up and I could not take another drink. And that was nothing that came from me. I never prayed to be sober. I never wanted to be sober. I wanted to drink, and that's what I did. I never hid my drinking. I was a raging, full-blooded alcoholic that was in a lot of fights and a lot of other things. And people look at me now, and I know they say, you look like a retired librarian. Let me tell you, that wasn't the case. I was tending bar in a bad part of town, and I got up, I couldn't drink, and I had a friend named Charlie, and Charlie knew how to sober people up or dry them out, really. But Charlie never stayed sober, but he knew how to help people dry out. And so I went to Charlie's, and he helped me dry out on the night of the fourth or fifth night. I finally got on my knees. I didn't say God. I said, somebody, please help me. I don't want to drink anymore. But I had a strong resentment against God, so I didn't want none of that God stuff. And I was dry for 5.5 months tending bar without Alcoholics Anonymous. And if you don't think I wasn't one crazy person, you don't have a clue. I vibrated. I called Alcoholics Anonymous. I said, how long do you keep shaking like this? He said, well, it all depends on how long you drink and what you drank. And he said, how long has it been since you drank? I said, 5.5 months. He said, where do you go to meetings? Meetings? I didn't go to meetings. The way this guy said it, he said, oh, my God, you got to go to meetings. I knew there was something to meetings. Anyhow, I found my way to the AA meeting that was... You went down the stairs at that time, and when I was going down the stairs of that clubhouse, it was like the world was weight was lifted off of me. For some reason, I knew I was where I belonged. And that's how I started into Alcoholics Anonymous. I did not like what you told me to do. I didn't like the God stuff. Growing up is a bitch. I did not want to grow up. I had temper tantrums. I asked the same questions over and over and over because I couldn't comprehend what you were talking about. And so for the first couple of years, I mean, I knew I was powerless over alcohol. I went through DTs. You don't go through DTs unless you're an alcoholic. I knew I was crazy. I knew I needed to be restored to sanity because you don't live like I lived and not be crazy. And I lived that way dry without alcohol in me. I was the same as if I'd been drinking. So, you know, I was in AA a couple of years, and they said to me, you know, you have to find a higher power named God or you're going to get drunk. And I better mention at this part of my talk, my talk is not conference-approved literature. That's they told me I had to get up every morning and read the 24-hour-a-day book. The daily reflection book wasn't even in existence at that. Everybody read the 24-hour-a-day book. And I did not like that book. It was full of God. And I told him, I was belligerent. I came here to save my ass, not my soul. I mean, you know, don't pray over me. Give me that crap. Anyhow, after about 6 or 8 months of reading their stupid book, I'm at a meeting and half of them say I'm trying too hard and the other half is saying I'm not trying hard enough. And now they're fighting with each other. What is wrong with her? But see, I didn't know what a conscious contact with God was. I didn't know what you were talking about. So after this big fight about what's wrong with me, I wouldn't want to repeat what I said on the way home. But anyhow, the next day when I got up, I was coming down my stairs and I thought, I'll read their stupid book one more day. And that's the first time in my life I ever experienced a conscious contact with my higher power. And I was more hooked on that feeling than I've ever been hooked on anything in my life. And let me tell you, I have a lot of other addictions. And so that sent me on this quest. And so I found a higher power. And then they said, you need to work the fourth step. Now, I still see them, but at that time they had these pull-down things like window shades and they had the steps on them and the numbers are in red. I read something recently that people who are insane are drawn to colors. And so that could be why I noticed that the steps had numbers on them. And as crazy as I was, I somehow knew you had to work one before you did two, and two before you did three. I don't know how I knew that, but I knew that. And it took me years. I'm not gonna, you know, but I worked the steps in sequence. Because I needed that higher power to be able to work step four. And they told me that if you're not writing step four, you haven't done it. You have to write it. Well, when I started to take the garbage out of my head and put it on paper, and I was sober now like 3-4 years, I found out how much I lied. I lied so much to myself, I believed my own crap. And so I would tear it up and rewrite it and tear it up. And at that time, there weren't any women. I didn't have a woman sponsor. And I didn't have a man in the world that would sponsor me either. They had this, my home group, these guys, and a couple of guys that were kind of like my spiritual advisors, but nobody ever gave me their phone number. No. We aren't doing that. We don't want this crazy lady calling our house and with our wives, you know. No. So I started writing on that. It took me about 7 months. I would write a half hour a day if it was going good. If it wasn't going good, a half hour. Because I had done sit-ups in my life, and I know if you do too many, you get so sore you quit. And I was determined. I was gonna do this. I was gonna work this program. I didn't know how, but somehow I knew that I was going to do this. And so when I got to take my fifth step, I did not go to confession. You know, I'd been to confession when I drank. I told the priest what I did. I'd leave there, I'd do the same thing all over again. So I knew that just going and telling somebody what I had done wasn't the answer. I had to find the exact nature of my wrongs. I had to find out what was wrong with me. Because if you don't know what the problem is, how are you ever going to come up with the answer? So I had to find out what the problem was. And by doing that, I found out. And then I started to do, you know, 6 and 7, my defects of character, my shortcomings. I fall short every day. You know, I'm never as good as I wish or hoped I could be. I mean, you know, I'm never as kind, as loving, as considerate as I could be. I'm always falling short. And then I did the amends step, and they told me, I looked up the word amends. It means make it right. It doesn't mean go out and apologize to everybody like you did when you were drinking. It means make it right. And Bill Wilson had a strong command of the English language. And if he wanted it to be apology, I think he'd use that word. He didn't. He used the word amends. You need to make it right. So if you stole $100 from somebody, you can apologize, but you better have the $100. Or a scheme on how to pay it back. Yeah. So, anyhow, now we're up to step 10, right? And I mean, I read the big book. I read the 12 and 12. But you know, we talk about when we read how it works, there's some people have grave emotional and mental disorders. And I happen to be one of them people. They would diagnose me bipolar. But at that time, the only medication they had was Thorazine, and they were never going to tell you to go and get Thorazine. So they had all these things when I was depressed. I used to be like this black aura about me sometimes, like in this terrible deep hole that I couldn't get out of. They'd have all this stuff that I needed to do and all this. And I'd finally work my way out of it, and then I'd be higher than a kite. I could walk on water, you know. I could get myself in a lot of trouble that way, too. So anyhow, they said you need to take this personal inventory, you know, and you can take it during the day when you start getting into trouble. I mean, one of the ways I started the MEM step was, you know, everything that came in my head came out my mouth. And, you know, after a number of years of doing that, you get so sick and tired of making amends, you finally quit it. You know, I learned how to shut up. That slogan, think, 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 you know. Shut up, Karen. Don't say what you're think, think, thinking. Because it gets you in a lot of trouble, you know. And I always used to think if I told everybody what I was thinking, they'd lock me up and never let me out. Because I was crazy. I was a crazy person. So anyhow, they said, you know, you can take the spot check during the day and then before you go to bed at night. Well, I tried doing that before I went to bed at night. You want to plug this head into something? 8 different directions going bingity, 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 bingity. And how are you ever going to go to sleep? You know, with your head activated like that. And then the other thing, when I'm tired, I'm negative against myself. Everything is, how could you be so stupid? Why did you say that? Why did you do that? And so I went back to the guys and I said, I can't do this stuff at night. You know, it just isn't working. They said, well, we know it says at night in the 12 by 12, but, you know, maybe you ought to do it in the morning. So, you know, I had been used to writing in the morning when I took my original 4th step. So I started to write my daily inventory out every morning. And, you know, that really changed my life. You know, that growth through the 10th step, the theme for today. When I get up in the morning, I make a cup of coffee, and then I write what's going on inside of me. I ask myself, how are you feeling today? And, you know, okay and like shit are not feelings. Let's establish this. You know, are you happy, sad, glad, afraid, ashamed, resentful, angry? You know, what are you feeling today? What are you feeling today? And then I write about it, if it's good or bad or whatever it is. And then, it tells you, you know, promptly admit it. Well, you know, I could steal $100 from you and promptly admit it, but that doesn't going to help me feel better about myself, you know. Because even though I'd been sober a long time, I still was not the honest, you know, perfect, honest person, you know. I need to do something about it, too. It isn't just admitting I made a mistake and when I was wrong, promptly admitted it. So I thought that God had a really good sense of humor when I got asked to speak on the 10th step. Because I don't work the 10th step like the book tells you to work it. You know, I do it in the morning. And it doesn't, I don't really care if you do it in the morning or in the afternoon or when you do it. It says continue. And if it's not working for you at night, you know, just don't quit doing it. I've heard people say that about meetings. You know, I went to that meeting. I didn't like it. They quit going to meetings. I said, oh, and you were drinking and you went to a bar and you didn't like the bartender, you quit drinking, right? Yeah. No, we don't just quit. You find another meeting. You know, just like when you were drinking, you found another bar. I mean, you know. And so if it's anybody in this room doesn't have a good experience with working the 10th step at night, maybe you need to try working it in the morning. Because when I have a good night's sleep, I feel a lot different. You know, the inventory, when I was wrong, I used to think I was always wrong. I actually even thought everything I did when I was drinking was wrong. I actually did some good things when I was drinking. I supported 2 sons, and yes, I wasn't emotionally a great mother, but the rent was always paid, the utilities always were paid, there's food in the house. I didn't expect somebody else to take care of my sons, all that, you know, but needless to say, they both ended up being alcoholic and drug dependent. So that's what I do. I continue to take my personal inventory. I write it because you can't trust someone like me. I could convince myself, lie, rationalize, alibi myself into thinking something's right when it's not. If I write it and put it on paper and stand back and look at it, I can see when I'm BSing. I mean, I know myself, and I can see what my defects of character are. I mean, I have a lot of defects of character still. I can be real judgmental. I mean, I can get pissed off with the best of them, you know. I can do all kinds of stuff. But, I mean, just because I'm sober, and it says anger is a dubious luxury that we can't afford to have, that doesn't mean that I never get angry. I mean, I get angry. I just need to stop and look at it and decide what I'm going to do about it. I know that there are people, when they look at me, they say, I can't believe anybody does that. I get up every day. I read my books. I journal. I don't think I've missed 6 times in the last maybe 35 years or how many years it's been. I do that all the time. But there are some fringe benefits to that. I've only taken 1/4 and 1/5 step because I worked the 10th step. And sometimes the girls I sponsor, they'll take a 4th step, they'll get all this garbage out, they'll have it all in the bag, they tell me all about it, they take it out to the curb, and then the next day when I talk to them, they went out to the curb, brought the bag back, and now it's in the basement. I go, why are you doing this to yourself? When you put the garbage out, leave it out there. You do not have to go out and bring it back home again. You know, leave it out there and then start working on your 10th step. Last October 5th, it'll be 9 months tomorrow, was a Sunday. It was a really nice day. I'd been to church. I felt really good. I was starting to get ready to go to Texas for the winter. And there was a knock on my door, and there was a policeman standing there. And he said to me, do you know Jeffrey Daniels? I said, before I even said it, my heart went into my stomach. And I said, yes, I'm his mother. He said, I hate to inform you, but your son is deceased. Oh, I was sick. Let me tell you, I was sick, sick, sick. My son had been alcoholic, drug addict, but he had been off drugs for years, and he had been sober for a long time, but he had went back to drinking and found out he had pancreatic cancer. Good news is he wasn't married. He didn't have any children. I never called them my kids. They weren't my kids. They were my sons. They were grown men. He was 55 years old. And he made a decision that he did not want to go through the pain of pancreatic cancer. So he took his own life. It's been a very hard 9 months on me. But God gave me this opportunity to come and share with you Because, see, the program of Alcoholics Anonymous has taught me when I share my joy with you, it multiplies. And when I share my sorrow with you, it dissipates. And I was suffering from like a low-lying depression up until like about a week and a half ago. And I woke up and it was gone. But that's only by the grace of God and the fact that I got up every morning and did the same things. I went to meetings, I sponsored people, I do all the same things. Because when something bad happens, you need to say to yourself, what would I be doing if this hadn't have happened? And you've got to do it. I don't give a shit how hard it is. You've got to do it. Because it's not going to go away on its own. It's not going to go away on its own. And so I'm really glad that you allowed me to share with you today. I hope somebody here got something out of this. I read that 120 people every day commit suicide in this country. And so there's a strong possibility that somebody in this room, if not more than one person in this room, is going to have a death in their family from suicide. You know, and that is a choice the person makes. Has nothing to do with me. Had nothing to do with me. My son was a grown man, and he chose to do that because he didn't want to go through all that. But just remember that if you work your program every day, if something like that were to happen to you, you're going to be okay. You're going to be okay. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Karen. And our next speaker is Tony H. from Pennsylvania.
Hi, everyone. I am an alcoholic, and my name is Tony. And my home groups are the step-by-step group in Bridgetown, Barbados, and the Vista group in Pennsylvania. And I've been, my sobriety date is August 7th, 1980. When I started to think about the topic of this meeting, Grow Through the 10th Step, I became a little bit confused because I remembered my sponsor's voice early in the program, because he told me that there was somebody who used to come to our group in Barbados and talk about the first three steps, and the first time I ever saw my sponsor get angry was he said, this is not a three-step program, it's a 12-step program. So when I heard about growth through the 10th step, I'm saying, well, if there's any growth that has happened in my life, it isn't through the 10th step, it's through all the steps. But that's how my mind works. Anyway, when I have to think about this question of growth in sobriety, I need to let you know a little bit of what growth in my life actually means. When I say I'm an alcoholic, I mean I'm somebody who should be dead. I have no right being alive and sober today. I had no reason whatsoever to drink. I come from a very stable family. There is nobody else in my immediate family that I know of who is an alcoholic. I seem to have come into this world, and I had a thirst immediately for alcohol. And I drank as much as I could, as often as I could, and I loved it. I actually loved it. And I had a very loving family, and I was given a lot of advantages, a lot of privileges, and alcohol just enhanced my life. I did extremely well in school. I was always a top student. I did very well at university. I was the top student, graduated top of my class. And I drank. I just drank enormous quantities and thought that this was the greatest gift that I had ever been given. Because intellectually I was okay. I had no lack of confidence in that area, but socially, you know, I was not the kind of person I can talk to girls, dance, or anything like that. So I needed alcohol in order to become someone. I thought that when I drank, I became better. I didn't know anything about getting drunk. I used to forget, but I thought that alcohol made me better. And I never looked at it. And I studied a lot, did well, started a professional career, drinking all the time and thinking I was the greatest thing on earth. And never really thought about it until, as I learned later, the progression set in. And I was a university teacher, and I was tenured and all of that, and I'd reached a point where I couldn't be fired. And around that time, I found myself calling my mother back in Barbados and asking her if she'd be willing to support me for the rest of my natural life. I found myself on my bed, and I had an ice pick in my hand, and I was trying to get the courage. I'd written a suicide note. And in the next few years, what I did, I just gave up my job. I wanted to do the only two things that I thought I liked doing in those days. My job was just I got tired of it, and I wanted to drink and swim, and I got a house in Barbados on the West Coast and devoted myself to being a full-time drunk. And within a few years, I'd run out of money, run out of friends. I had two kids, my wife and kids, they left, and I used to make a lot of suicide attempts, put my head in the oven and turn on the gas, ended up in a psych ward and so on and so forth and whatnot, ended up as a bum on the street. And that was my life. But even when I was on the street, I remember waking up a morning in Barbados on the steps of a rum shop, and there were people walking to work, and they stepped over my body, and I remember saying to myself, these people are stupid. They have to go to work, and here am I, a free man. Now, the point I want to make is that I was an extremely arrogant kind of person, and so that I ended up in hospital the last time with the back of my head split open. To this day, I don't know how it happened, but when I got back to this work, this job, this guy 12-stepped me. To cut a long story short, asked me how many drinks I thought I could take and still be in control. I was somebody who always liked to get the right answer, and I didn't know what the right answer was, and I said 4 or 5, and he didn't. I'm trying to time myself because I'm very bad at these things. I tend to be a bit long-winded. But I said 15, 20, and 40, 50. And he just smiled quietly, and he said it didn't matter. I could call whatever number I like and see if I could go out and drink and stop at that number night after night. So I did. Bandage on my head full of blood, and I went out, and I took one drink. And then I ordered another drink and forgot all about him, all about control and so on. But he'd given me some stuff to read. One was a 20 questions questionnaire, and I got 19 yeses out of 20. And when I read down at the bottom, it said, if you got 3, you have a problem with alcohol. And the other thing was an article about alcoholism as a progressive, irreversible, potentially fatal disease. And as I read it, it was obvious to me that I was an alcoholic. But as I read on, it said, in order to recover, you have to be abstinent, not drink. And I knew I could never do that. I am not someone, I never wanted to stop drinking. I never made a decision to stop drinking. August 6, 1980, I was a full-blown, hopeless drunk. And the decision that I had made was that I wouldn't make any more suicide attempts. I would allow the alcohol to kill me. But somehow, the night of August the 6th, the morning I woke up and I felt different, and two ideas came into my head. One was that I shouldn't have a drink for that day, and I wrote not today on a piece of paper. And the other one was that I remember this guy had said, if you ever think you need help, call me and I'll take you to Alcoholics Anonymous. And for some crazy reason, I called him, and he took me to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I've never had a drink since then. But the point is, since I knew the kind of person that I was, I had no reason to be an alcoholic. I was just a drunk. And I knew that, for some reason, he told me that recovery was through the steps. And I knew that I had to work the steps. I thought if I worked the steps, I wouldn't drink. That's what I thought it was. And I didn't know what recovery from alcoholism was. But I did it to the best of my ability and started working through the steps. The first time I did my first 4th step, I called him immediately. He walked a couple of miles to where I was living to hear my first fifth step. And we continued through the steps, and I've been really doing that ever since. This is what I do. I just live according to the principles of Alcoholics Anonymous. I really do not deviate very much, and I don't drink one day at a time. As I was reading through, once again, the 10th step in the 12 and 12 in the big book, I found out that it talked about, and I can't remember the exact quote, you know, but keeping an emotional balance as a result of the 10th step and meeting challenges as they come and all of that. And I said, well, okay, you've been sober for quite a while. What growth has happened in your life? What can you talk about? Share any experiences that you can share about that indicate some kind of growth? And I was thinking about the challenges that have happened in my life. Now, when I was married before, I was a serial cheater. It never occurred to me not to cheat. I slept with whoever I could, whenever I could, and that was it. And since I've come into Alcoholics Anonymous, in 1984, I was minding my own business in Barbados, attending my home group meeting, and this woman walked in, and we asked her to share that meeting, and she asked me the way to an AA meeting. And I said, follow me. And I've been following her ever since. We got married in 1986. And you can ask her, I think I've been through the steps of this program because I had to go through taking my own inventory, 8 steps, 9 steps on my relationship with women and all of that. I've been a pretty good husband. I have been a wonderful husband. I think that she would have known. And you have to understand that that is beyond a miracle. I am not constitutionally that kind of person. Other challenges, I can't remember how sober I was, probably about 20 years or so. My best friend in Barbados, he called me. He was the guy I used to go to. We drank together and all of that. And when I was trying to commit suicide, I used to go to him and call him. And he called me one night and said that he was thinking of killing himself. And I said, Pat, you know, I used to call you, don't drink until you see me, and so on. And he killed himself the following day. You know, he committed suicide. Not only did I not drink, but I continued to practice these principles in all my affairs. 2 years ago, my only brother, he was an alcoholic or anything, he was diagnosed with cancer, and on the day after, it was the night of my 32nd AA anniversary, I remember going by him through the help of my wife. It's something about growth through the 10 step. I've had a lot of people who've helped me to interpret the steps and to do the things that I need to do in order to grow, because I don't know them by myself. And she'd encouraged me to go to Barbados and spend as much time as I could with him. And I saw him every day the last couple of weeks of his life. And the day after my 32nd AA anniversary, you know, my sister called me. He was staying there. And he had fallen on the floor. And my sister was on one side and I was on the other. And we were walking back towards his bedroom, and he died in my arms, and that was a pretty traumatic experience for me, but it had nothing to do with my drinking. Last year, my wife, we've been married for 29 years, wonderful relationship that we have. We've done a lot of service in AA together, and she was diagnosed. I'm not breaking her anonymity because she shared it at the women's meeting just yesterday. But she was diagnosed with a very, very serious illness. And, you know, we have been walking through it. Not only have we not been drinking, but we've become even more convinced of the importance of Alcoholics Anonymous in our lives. And because our marriage depends, in fact, on the principles of AA, particularly the first tradition, our common welfare should come first, personal recovery depends upon our unity. And so we've done that. I have had other challenges. One of my problems, my talking about defects of character, there is something in my head that says that I am supposed to be the greatest thing on earth. I have a tremendous God complex, and that's why I couldn't stop drinking. I never listened to anybody. I knew everything and so on. And by the grace of God and the power of this program, I was restored to my former career. And I have done, if you look at it from outside, I've done really, really well since, you know, my alcoholism cost me several years of development, which would have been my most productive years. But recently, I'm close to retirement now. And I've been telling myself, you know, as a university professor, there's certain things I'm supposed to do. And recently, the last couple of weeks, I'm telling myself, the last book you wrote, I can't find a publisher. I didn't get the promotion that I really wanted and so on and so forth. And my head started telling me, but you are really the world's greatest failure. You're no good at all. You're nothing. And one of the ways in which I work this 10th step, you see, in taking my own inventory, I know I have excessive pride and all of that and problems with self-esteem in certain areas, but I have to discuss this with somebody else. That's why it's not just the 10th step or 4th step or whatever. And I called somebody and whose sobriety I respect, and he asked me, whose voice are you hearing in your head? Which is an interesting question. And the only answer I could come up with is my own voice. Now, the thing is, what I've learned is that I am not well. I really didn't mean that as a joke. I am not. No, I'm hoping to get better, because I know, you see, my being sober is really the biggest miracle you could ever imagine. I never, ever wanted to stop drinking. I can't understand how anybody like me would ever want to stop drinking. I got so much out of alcohol. It made me feel like God, and I like feeling like God. I could go into a room like this and break it up. You know, that was the sort of thing I used to do, and it gave me a sense of power. And every now and again in sobriety, I say to myself, well, you don't have that same kind of power that you used to have. But what I do have, I don't know where it comes from, you see, because it's not through me. Somehow, I heard somebody say recently, from the time I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I have become obedient as far as AA principles are concerned, and I don't understand it. I am not an obedient kind of person. I like to do my own thing. I don't like following crowds and so on and so forth. But in Alcoholics Anonymous, I can follow the directions that I have been given. And because there's something that tells me I'm very smart, I tell myself, you know, you're really smart because Alcoholics Anonymous has all the answers that you need. And because I am so willing to follow this, I get all the results that you can imagine. I live a life beyond your wildest dreams and my wildest dreams. My life is so good, sometimes I feel guilty at how good it is. Because I don't deserve it. I don't deserve it. I didn't want to come into Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't want to get sober. I was prepared to die. I made repeated attempts to kill myself and nothing worked. And yet I come here and I follow these steps and I try to do the best that I can, and lo and behold, I'm here. We were talking before the meeting, and this to tell you how much I know, you know. I said, well, this is the meeting before the big meeting tonight, so I expected about 20 or 30 people, and we come in and we see this room, and it is, to my mind, fairly intimidating. I am not unaccustomed to speaking in front of crowds, but this is a bit much. And and I don't know what else I can say. I feel extremely privileged to be here. I feel privileged to be alive. I don't know if I have spoken as I should on this step, but this has been my experience, and I'd like to thank you for my life and thank you for being here.
Thank you very much, Tony. And our last speaker is Jack Q from Missouri.
Hi, everybody. I'm Jack. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is October 15th, 2001. And there's a boatload of people in Joplin and they're appreciative of that. I think you all can go home now. You've heard enough. I want to thank my friends from District 12, my sponsor, my friends from Area 39 who are here, and that means a lot. So, wow, there is a lot of people out there. So I sent a text to my sponsees, and my wife and I came up here on Wednesday night, and I said, well, I just want to see this little room so I'll know, and I think it's this little group of people, and I see all these damn chairs, and we take a picture of it, and I send it to my sponsee, and he sends me a text back and says, Jack, the people in the back row won't even be able to see you. So that's kind of how life works for me. So, yeah, I went to college, too. I learned to be a blackout drinker. So that's my accomplishment. Thank you very much. I think for me to get where I need to get on the 10th step, I got to talk about all my excuses on what I think were my problems when I walked in the room, because I, too, knew nothing about Alcoholics Anonymous. Really didn't like you people when I walked in, and my first resentment is now my sponsor. So that works out really well. I came from a manufacturing background, and it was a real, I worked at this job, and I was kind of good at what I did, and I'd go to these different departments, and they would have problems, and they'd send me into these departments and fix the problems, and we were measuring our efficiencies in seconds, you know, and if you weren't doing this in this second and this second, and everything was fast-paced and hardcore, and I'm sure everybody in this room said I worked hard and I played really hard, too, and I lived that life, and I did that, and that became who I was. It became my personality. Everything I did was pretty fast and pretty hard, and that's just who I was. And if you didn't like it, tough crap, you know. That's just who I am. And so I came in here, and that's kind of how I walked in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. I had an opinion, and if you didn't like it, I didn't care. And I was arrogant, that's just how I kind of did things. So I've had to do a lot of 10 steps. You know, that's just kind of the real facts of it. So when I got this saying and I got that email from Eva and asked if I would speak, and I know that was a result of what my sponsor had done, and I'm grateful for that. Really, I am. There's a lot of people out there. So everything was intense, and I did everything intense, and I was so good at it, and they would move me around, and I did all this stuff, and I got sober at this place, and I didn't like the way I was, and Alcoholics Anonymous had taught me a kind of a different way of life, and I didn't like the way that I was doing things at this place. But I owed them something back, because I took a lot from them, from what my responsibilities were there, because I would go into my office and shut the door, I did things that you shouldn't be doing and decisions that you were making. You know, I shouldn't be doing those type of things. And so I stayed at the facility for 5 more years and to pay back my debt to them because that's what I needed to do. And from there, I went to another corporation and taught all this stuff that I learned at the other facility. And it was about how you're going to work hard and how you're going to push hard and this is what we do, and this is how you do it. And there was a lot of people that lost their jobs because of the way I thought and the way that I acted. And I got to the point I didn't like that person anymore. And so I had to grow up in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I did it fighting and kicking and screaming, and there was a lot of people that, you know, just kind of laughed and shook their head and said, oh, my God, you know, this is Jack being Jack. And it continued and continued, and I'm staying sober, and I'm telling people this is the way that you should work the program of Alcoholics Anonymous and all of this stuff, and you know, I mean, you can tell I'm just a big hit back home, and I had to change, and so I did start to slowly change, and I changed through the process of the steps, and finally admitting the problems that I had were not your problems. They weren't your fault, because when I drank and I did all this stuff, it was always your fault, and it was always her fault, and it was always my kid's fault, and it was never my fault. And I stayed real sick for a while until I started taking some responsibility for my actions in the program, before I got to the program. And once that started happening, I started to see some growth in me, and I started to change as a person. I say that because, you know, I haven't had to do as many 10th steps lately, but because I have changed as a person. But, you know, the big book, the 10th steps, right after the 9th step prayer, you know, and or the 9th step promises, and it talks about in there the love and tolerance in the 10th step. And, man, I really needed that love and tolerance because, you know, I couldn't stand myself when I walked in the room. I couldn't stand who I was. So you get this process of working these steps and this chance to change. And when you do something like crap and you feel like crap, and I know for me, when I feel in my gut's just a rock, you know, that I've probably done something wrong. And I revert back to that intense guy and treating people like crap. And all that stuff starts to work back into my life. And the 10th step tells me, Are you losing your spiritual connection with God? That's where you got to have God, and I've got to have God every day of my life for me to try to do what's right in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, because left up to me, I'll screw this thing up. And so I get here and I get this belief and this feeling, this God thing that I'd never had. And I'd been going to church all my life, and I could never get a closeness to God. And I come in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I get this unbelievable connection to God. And that unbelievable connection just continues to grow and grow in me. And I'm changing as a person finally. Those bad times aren't as bad as they used to be, and I'm starting to change. And when I revert back to that old self, I get that knot in my stomach, and this happened about 3 weeks ago, 2 weeks ago, and somebody didn't do something I thought they should have been done, and I told them that they should have been doing it, and I didn't just tell them, I just got in their face and said, rah, 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 rah. you know, and that's what I used to do. I'm sure that from a management position that unions were developed because of people like me. You know, and thank God for that. You know, I worked in a shop. It was a union shop, and we didn't always see eye to eye. But I got sober there, and I stayed there for 5 years. And those employees that hated me started to see a different type of person. And it, you know, when I left, I would run into them, and they'd say, "You weren't so bad." So that was growth for me. But I see shiny things and I lose track, and I saw a shiny thing, and Cardinals are ahead 1-0, if you need to know. Sorry. I'm timing myself, and so I got a flash. So sorry about that. You had two really good speakers earlier. I'm telling you, they were awesome. I'm bringing up the rear for a reason. So I get here, and I get this connection, and I get this God here, and I change as a person, and it's unbelievable, and I can't tell you. I walked in here, and my kids, they were scared to death of me. They were terrified. We were supposed to go to the internet. We wanted to go to the international 5 years ago. We couldn't because I had two girls that got married, and my wife and I got married. Three weddings in 1 year, you don't do international. They asked me to walk them up the aisle. You don't do that. You don't get to do that. You don't get to be the tyrant that I was. You don't get to do that. My whole message to everybody is always hope. You know, it's a message of you can be a screw up like me and you can change. You know, the people that say that this is who I am and you're going to have to like it, that's just not what it's about. It's about you change as an individual. The 10th step tells you you have changed. You've got this spiritual connection to God, and you ask Him to remove your stuff. And I ask every day, and I say, God, help me. Your will, not mine. Because my will is really screwed up. My will, I gave a great talk this morning in the bathroom. I could have wished you were all there. Quite honestly, I wish that many people would be here. I had a really small bathroom, but it was really good then, and it really not so much today. You know, I come from a place where this many people, if you're lucky, are there, and that's good. You know, that's good. So it's what beyond honor. It's a beyond this God. It is so cool. If you're new, I can tell you the ride is unbelievable. And if you're old, you can still screw up. And in that 10th step, it talks about progress, not perfection. All that stuff. See, I had to read all this stuff again about the 10th step and all the things that I need to need about tolerance tolerance is in there. It talks about the 10th step and perfection. No, it's you know, growing and all of those things that I have to. There was a reason God picked me to be up here, you know, because all those things I need to talk about and all those warts that I had as an individual, that's just who I am and who I became. But it's starting to change. And you know, I've got 13 years of sobriety, and I can promise you I screw up not as much. That's progress for me, you know, and today I don't treat people like crap. I try to treat people with respect. God is where it's at, you know. God is the thing for me. God is all for me. He will change me. I've said it and I'll say it again. Thank God. Thank AA. You know, I came to AA and the only thing it did is it changed everything about me. Everything. And I am going to say thank you all for letting me be here and listen to these two wonderful speakers. Thank you.